It's time to hear what's good, what's bad, and what's ugly at the multiplexes and at the art house.
Warehouse, farmhouse, hen house, outhouse, or doghouse in that area.
You'll also hear about new and old films on Blu-ray and on DVD. Plus, you'll hear all the latest Hollywood gossip.
I don't care!
Okay, maybe not the latter, but it is time for Film Sociology with WFYI's film guru.
Kaiser Shizzy!
No, that's Matthew Sosi.
It's such a fine line between stupid and clever, yes. Yeah.
Let's see how thin the line is. Here's your host, Matthew Sosi.
Hello there, film lovers. Welcome to Film Sociology, a film talk show here on WFYI HD to the Point and WFYI.org. If you have a question or a comment, you can email me at msosi@WFYI.org. Also on Facebook, also on Twitter at Matthew Sosi. Show is available as a podcast. It's also available on iTunes. You can check out our blog at
filmsociology.tumblr.com.
Man's voice you just heard is somebody who's got mad studio skills. That's Kobe Slagle.
Hello, hello.
Sir, do you recognize the music?
The Warriors, yes.
Very good. All right. Very good. That's Brian G. Hartz. Do we have Brian's intro?
Yeah, we do. Hang on a second. Man.
I know. I'm so demanding
of you. Q-Hunts. Q-Hunts!
Somebody get Hans and the cellos. That's his string quartet. Actually, while he's looking for that, we also have in studio Paige Scott. And the reason why Brian and Paige are here is they're both a part of Bomb on a Bus, the parody musical of Speed.
It's called Inception.
Did we mention Brian Hartz is in the house?
What? Hello.
Hi, Paige. Welcome. Baptism
Hello.
By fire.
Oh, my gracious.
One day, maybe you'll have your own theme music.
But not nearly as long as Brian's.
Today's not that day.
You could write your own theme music. I guarantee it would be much better than that.
No, no, no. It must be in 4-4 with lots of cellos and bassoons. That can also be used if you look online for Bane Cat, which is now the current internet thing I've noticed.
Oh, what? I have not seen Bane Cat.
Well, here you go. A Film Sociology exclusive. When you get home, not while the show's happening, Kobe. there is something called Bane Cat. Now, fortunately,
Bane is in Batman Bane.
Yes.
Yes.
Yes. No, Barbara Bane from Space 1999. Of course.
Thank you. Me too. Thank you.
And Red Clay's a great album. Shut up. Well, this is started off lovely. Okay. but before I got interrupted by Hans, yes, a musical version of Speed, which sounds like a punchline. Only people actually did this one, so that's outstanding.
Yes.
And so we'll be talking about that in a little bit. Going to leave you hanging. But we have a bunch of things happening around Indianapolis and the Cineplex world. Opening in theaters today. Oh, Cope, did we find the trailer for Sabotage? Not the Beastie Boys song, but it's the latest. It's the latest alimony payment from Arnold Schwarzenegger.
And you know why? Why didn't they use the Beastie Boys song? I mean, it,
I got a feeling the surviving two members and
okay, well, maybe
would not want anything to do with Mr. Schwarzenegger's work.
Plus, I think I'd rather see the movie that the video for Sabotage is a trailer
more than the Sabotage film itself. So
1970s cops.
Oh yeah.
Kobe, we love 70s cops. Right?
Yeah, they're different kinds of cops. I'm looking for them here.
Did you pick up your feet in Poughkeepsie? Did you? Have you? You're not finding it. It's okay.
I'm looking.
Okay, that's fine. Well, let me know when it's going to happen, so it doesn't happen when we get in mid review of something else. Also opening in theaters, a film I'm seeing tomorrow, and I'm seeing it by myself, but it's the latest from Lars von Trier called Nymphomaniac, Volume 1. Yes. All I can tell you is go read Ed Johnson Ott's review of it in Nouveau or Nouveau.net. It is very entertaining. First off, if you don't know who Lars von Trier is, you're not in for a fun evening watching Nymphomaniac, despite its title.
That's a no.
That is definitely.
And we get to talk about another happy, fun filmmaker, Darren Aronofsky, this week.
We will get to Mr. Aronofsky's opus in a little bit.
Speaking of musicals, it occurs to me that there's got to be something in like a musical about the family von Trier.
Maybe.
The Sound of Misery.
Will write it.
Oh, gosh. Well, Emily Watson's available and willing. No. But anyway, so I'll be intrigued. I don't know why I feel like I need to watch. I do. Here's my thing about Lars von Trier. My first experience of his work was, for a lot of people, was Breaking the Waves. Mm-hmm. And then Dancer in the Dark, and then Dogville and Mandalay. Now, for me, going in to see a film from Mr. von Trier, the only thing that has to run through my mind is it more upsetting than Antichrist? I saw Antichrist in the theater. And by the way, I'm going to do it again tomorrow. Probably not the best thing to do, but going to see a Lars von Trier film and then doing a show, not the best thing to walk into.
No, probably not.
Probably not. But he did have one of his lighter fares last time with Melancholia.
Yeah.
That's lighter by comparison, I'm telling you. But it was funny. I was talking with Stacey Studeville, who's been on the show before, and Melancholia was her first Lars von Trier experience. She doesn't want to experience anymore.
Wow.
I also had an actress, who I will not name, but she knows who she is, who saw Melancholia, and the only thing she knew about it going in was that Kiefer Sutherland was in it. By that same rationale, she should have seen Pompeii. And nobody saw Pompeii.
Yeah, did that even last a weekend in the theaters?
Well, apparently, I remember there was a fascinating article in the AV Club because Paul, not Punch Lunk Drove Anderson. Dan, that's terrible.
Yeah, Paul W.S. Anderson, not Paul Thomas Anderson.
Not Paul Thomas Anderson, Paul W.S.
Talent.
Apparently, Paul W.S. had signed a contract with the studio in Austria, I believe, and the film lost money there.
Wow.
Not a good way to start a...
No.
You know what? It's like signing Derrick Rose. Thank you, Kobe. So we just move on. Oh, we're going to move on.
Yeah,
okay, yeah, the big title opening this week is speaking of intense filmmakers, Darren Aronofsky, who is giving us something lighter than Black Swan, and
which was one of his lightest movies to date.
I think it is one of his lightest movies, and Megan Cooper, say what you will, you know you love it. I know she's listening. But yeah, he decided to do a film of Noah. Insert your favorite Bill Cosby riff here. What's a cubic? All that.
Right.
Right. So, he co-wrote the film. And guess what? There's obviously a little bit of controversy with it. There will be the Tebow clan, with a C, are not going to be thrilled with the fact that God is not mentioned once in the film. There is creator, with a C, and there is references to he with an H. So it's not completely out of it, but it's also co-written by Darren Aronofsky. It is not cited based on the book by. So there's that.
Based on the book by.
Based. Bunch of writers. But yeah. God. Homeschooled.
Yeah. And there's, if you've seen a trailer for it in theaters in the last few weeks, they put like a 3-panel disclaimer at the end of the trailer about artistic license and
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. See, I don't remember them doing that with Anne Baxter's beautiful bouncing eyes in The Ten Commandments.
Where's your Messiah now? Yeah. See, yeah, I'm always reminded of when the story was, and this is my second reference to Sir Ian McKellen in about an hour, but when they screened the Da Vinci Code at Cannes, audiences were kind of mixed about it, and so the next day there was a press conference, and it was Brian Glazer, Ron Howard, Tom Hanks, and Ian McKellen. That's got to be fun. And Ron talked about there was talk amongst him and the studio of maybe having at the beginning of the film a place card saying this is based on a work of fiction. To which Sir Ian McKellen replied, I think the first page of the Bible should have a place card saying, I can't wait for your hateful emails. So yeah, Russell Crowe is Noah. Butt-kicking Noah, by the way. You know that's happening. who gets some... Now, the thing about Aronofsky is a very visual filmmaker. And there's some very Aronofsky moments. Noah has dreams that there's going to be a big flood, and that's going to happen. If you hear the review of this on Fresh Air, which you can hear at npr.org, I think it was David Edelstein who made a great point, and it didn't even dawn on me until as I was watching it this morning. But there's this huge rush of CGI animals. So PETA will go see this film because it's all CG animals. CG animals that don't make any noise, apparently, whatsoever. The other thing is that's different is first there's a big kind of Tippi Hedren scary level of birds flying in. And then there
like
is
Tippi
then
Hedren.
There is a Indiana Jones scaring thing of snakes all coming in. Why does it have to be snakes? And but apparently it's every breed of snake and bird. So it's not like the Bible stories we grew up reading and looking at for kids where it was like two representatives and two only. So I was like, a colleague of mine was saying that might be a more interesting film. I want to see the bird tournament. Yeah. There's no bigger rivalry than Cardinal Blue Jay to get on the winner gets on the ark. So yeah, big
what
boat.
What did the birds care anyway? They could fly.
You know what they have?
There's also a thought.
There is that, but there was also when they're flying, they have to carry their Rickenbackers with them.
See what he did there?
Yeah.
8 miles high.
You all right there, Cub?
That was good. That was good.
Oh, thank you, Sir Charles. Mm-hmm. Anyway, so there's Russell Crowe. You have Jennifer Connelly. So there's a beautiful mind reunion, if anybody needed that. Or there is a reunion of the actress and the director of Requiem for a Dream. I can tell you Jennifer Connelly fares a little better this time around.
Thank goodness.
Yeah. There's you've not seen a Requiem for
yes,
a Dream.
Yes, I have.
Yeah, that's
I'm just having a
I'm sorry. Erase that cuz
yes, like, help me forget.
I had been thinking, you know, based on the ending of that movie, maybe he might have been better to tell the tale of Sodom and Gomorrah, but
yeah. Wah, wah.
Actually, Aronofsky's been fascinated with the Genesis for quite some time. He actually wanted to build in a fourth plot line to the fountain that took place in the Garden of Eden, but budgetary constraints forced him to ditch that one.
Well, he's got some Garden of Eden stuff happening in this one.
Oh,
he's, yeah,
okay.
He's got biblical plot things happening there, Cob.
Yeah?
Yeah.
That's not terrible.
It's not terrible. The building of the Ark, and the other fun thing is there's rain that falls from above, and there's these things. The only thing I can describe them as, and I can't remember if they're in the trailer or not, but they're giant rock people. These giant rock robots. They look like Transformers, really. I'm not making this up. My guests are looking at me like I just did something on the floor. But no, there's these giant rock creatures that also help build the Ark. I hope they have a degree in carpentry to build this, because it's not Evan Almighty where it's just one guy with wood and putting it up there and cubit and annoying the neighbors and everything. But it was intriguing. Before the film, you have two of the trailers are the Greg Kinnear, Thomas Hayden Church spiritual movie, which I assume people are going to see and are going to see that, and the new Transformers film, Mark Wahlberg dealing with Transformers. But So there's the building of the Ark. Yeah, spoiler alert, it rains. But there's also conflict between Noah and the King, played by Ray Winstone. Always nice to see Ray. Choose a little scenery. Not quite as much as Brian Cox in Troy, but still pretty fun nonetheless.
It's funny because the way he was made up in the trailers, I kind of thought it was Brian Cox. But
yep. You all right over there?
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, and Emma Watson shows up, and she gets hooked up with one of Noah's sons, the one who plays Romeo and Pip from Great Expectations, the PBS, the one who looks like a male Keira Knightley. Look him up. You'll see exactly what I'm
saying. Difficult mental picture.
I know. So there's the conflict about the king being able to put his people onto the Ark, and Noah trying to get the thing built, and then there's these weird rock creatures, and then there's action scenes. I guess get ready for a butt-kicking Noah this time around.
All right.
There are a few intimate moments. There's one in particular at the very end of the film involving Crow and Connolly, and it's really nice, and it screams in a good way of Aronofsky, but I don't think there's enough of that in this. This is a huge task, I'm sure, for any filmmaker. And I know Aronofsky wanted to put his own spin on it. I think he did, but there were times, especially with the action scenes, that it did look like and feel like a Michael Bay film.
Wow,
that's not good.
That's a strange hybrid.
That is, but I'm telling you, look up Rock People and Noah, and you'll see these things.
Well, in Genesis, it does mention that there are, you know, angels and all sorts of other supernatural beings wandering around.
But apparently, they're CGI rock giants. So, and rock giants there. We stopped playing Tommy Wiseau. So the other thing you should know, Paige, this is your home for Tommy Wiseau information. Don't worry about it.
Sorry, I'm really slow.
No, it's
room.
Okay.
Okay.
Yeah,
yes.
It's all right.
Yes. Okay.
So anyway,
we're all here.
We're all here now.
Now I'm here. Yes.
That's all right. So anyway, if Darren Aronofsky is able to irritate some people, I'm all for that, because I think art should irritate and comfort, and comfort the irritated and irritate. I'm just paraphrasing Inherit the Wind badly, but kudos to him. It's just, I don't think it's his best work, and I don't know if we really needed another story of Noah, but he made it anyway. So
yeah, it's not hella bad.
No, it's slightly better than hella bad. It's okay. You know what? It's so-so, which we were talking about earlier.
Mm-hmm.
So, all right. Also in theaters today, your chair is creaking.
Sorry, man.
That's all right. But we have the directorial debut of Jason Bateman in a dark comedy called Bad Words. And first off, whoever brought their 9-year-old daughter to the screening on Tuesday, you're an idiot.
Wow.
I'm hoping you didn't have money for a sitter. Or you thought maybe because the accountant from Mr. Magorium's Wunderbar Emporium is in this. No, it's not the case. But Bateman plays a guy who, due to loopholes, is able to get himself involved in the National Spelling Bee. Now, of course, it's not the National Spelling Bee because it's, you know, you got to change the copyrights on those. But Allison Janney, Philip Baker Hall are in this film as well. And he strikes up a weird friendship, kind of a bad Santa-esque friendship, with one of the fellow contestants, a 10-year-old Indian boy. And it's rated R for a reason, and it's called Bad Words for a reason. There's a lot of insults. There's a lot of very, very colorful language, none of which we can ever recreate here. And it is not for everybody. And I love the fact that it's not for everybody. When you have a film with a title like Bad Santa or Bad Teacher, or in this case, Bad Words, you're going to go down a dark comedic path. And this film does. The only thing I ask is that when you get near the end, don't pull your punches. And for the most part, the film almost achieves all of this. I guess this is one of those that you have to find a reason to follow Bateman's character and maybe sympathize with him as you find out as the story goes on, which I won't reveal here. But man, it's a rough ride, and there are things that were said in this film that I had not heard of, and that's the eyebrow went up, Brian. Add this to Brian's list there.
Now, as you said, this is not for everybody.
Oh no.
Is this,
you know what somebody might say? It's obnoxious.
Okay. Is it not for everybody in the same way that Your Highness was not for everybody?
Yes. Okay. Yes. Although this one is far funnier.
Okay.
Far funnier. Far from it.
Okay.
Yeah. Did you see Your Highness in the theater?
No. No, I saw. I
How
saw.
Did the theater smell?
I saw maybe 15 minutes of Your Highness once it was out on Redbox and turned it off because that was just
that was bad. That was,
ain't nobody got time for that.
No. do you have a response worthy of that?
Yeah, hang on, I just had it and I'm looking for it here. There we go.
It's dumb.
Yeah, it was really dumb. Really dumb.
It's awful. I don't even know what else to say. It's just awful. Don't be bothered by it.
Yeah. There's, yeah, the things that Bateman says to, and, you know, to his little buddy and to fellow contestants, and where he takes the little 10-year-old as far as, you know, to back alleys and hookers and bad food and just, yeah, it's not
bad food.
Bad food.
Heaven forbid.
Oh, well, you know, there's some, I sent on Kobe's page. We have a list of, sidebar for a second. Kobe and I have a list of signs that you've made it as a white person.
Mm-hmm.
So things like, you have a fridge in your
garage. A fridge and or a freezer in the garage.
you have VIP passes to all the concert series.
To the concerts.
You have a suite.
A suite at the, yeah, I think the crown jewel though is if you have a golf cart.
You have a golf cart. That's always good. Timeshare. You have a timeshare condos. You have either courtside or you have a suite for sporting events, mm-hmm. and you go with your jersey tucked in,
mm-hmm.
or the concert T-shirt over your dress shirt.
Yes,
those folks. Well, on Kobe's page, somebody had come up with the tournament brackets for white people's troubles, and this year's winner was gluten. So that's bad food right there. Anyway, really enjoyed Bad Words, and you know, not.
Oh, but you did enjoy it.
I did enjoy it. Not the perfect dark comedy, but close enough to be really enjoyable. And again, it will irritate some people, and that's fun. Apparently, the dine-in movie theaters open at Latitude 360, or go to
Latitude 39,
but it's Latitude360.com,
mm-hmm.
and they are showing Hoosiers and Frozen. So there's those. And Kobe, what's happening at your alma mater?
Tonight, IU Cinema, excuse me, 7 o'clock in the International Art House series, we have American Revolutionary, The Evolution of Grace Lee Boggs from last year.
Okay.
Do you know it?
Did not see it.
Did not see it. Tomorrow, IU Cinema, 3 o'clock. Get ready, Matt.
3 o'clock tomorrow?
Linsanity, the movie.
Oh, gosh. How to make a lot of money sitting on the bench for the Knicks. Nah, I'm kidding. Yeah. I'm kidding. I know. He's. What are his stats in Houston? Is he a starter in Houston?
I think he's starting.
Okay,
I'm pretty sure he's starting.
But yeah,
that's why they brought him there.
That is why they brought him there. He got serious Houston paper money.
Mm-hmm.
Great. That's wonderful.
So that's at 3 o'clock tomorrow, down in Bloomington at IU Cinema. Tomorrow 6:30, from 1993 matinee.
Oh, the John Goodman, Joe Dante film,
mm-hmm.
the homage to the B movies. With Kathy Moriarty. Yeah, so he's not William Castle. He's not Roger Corman. He's somebody of that ilk showing his latest opus, Mant. Half man, half ant. All terror. So that's cool. Good.
That in the Art and Legacy of Roger Corman series that they're doing at IU Cinema. Then tomorrow, Saturday night, follow matinee up at 9:30 with the horror science fiction movie from 1978, Piranha.
Ooh.
Speaking of Roger Corman.
Written by John Sayles.
Yes.
Yes, one of the better knockoffs of Jaws.
Yeah.
That's a good one.
Now, was it? Now, that wasn't the one that Cameron directed, was it? He directed the sequel, right?
He directed the sequel. I want to say, was it Joe Dante? Would you check that, Mr. Slagle? Check who directed Piranha. I want to say it was Joe Dante.
I'm on it.
I'm going to say Bradford Dillman was in that, I think. One of the...
There were fish. I remember that.
They were
piranha.
Yeah. Like a few.
You got it?
Yeah, Joe Dante.
Joe Dante.
Right,
so a Joe Dante double feature at IU.
Excellent.
Thank you,
yes.
IU Cinema.
And then Sunday, March 30th from 1974 at 3 p.m., Score. You know Score.
I do not know
Do
Score.
Not know Score. And then Monday, March 31st, in the President's Choice series.
Got to get him here, man.
The IU President's Choice. On Monday, March 31st, IU Cinema at 7 p.m. from 1965, the foreign language drama, Sandra.
All right.
Interesting choices from Mr. McRobbie.
We got to get him on the show.
Yeah.
Yeah, we got to talk to John Vickers. First off, we got to get John Vickers on the show and then get the IU president on the show.
That'd be cool.
You should call up. You're an alum.
Hey. We're tight like that.
That's right. You're tight like
we
that.
We can do that.
We. That's right.
As long as they can call us for money, right?
They do.
Not that they're going to get any of it.
You an IU grad?
Yeah, I am.
Well, good. You call them too.
Okay. All right.
Okay.
Get right on that.
The campaign has started.
I will send you $5 if you send Michael McRobbie to appear on Film Sociology. There you go.
We'll pass the plate around the building, which is great because it's after 5:00. When we come back after the break, we'll talk about what's new and old on DVD and Blu-ray. We have Dead Person We Like. We have Christian Cinema Comments. And we have to talk about a musical version of Speed. And here's the music from Speed. You're listening to Film Sociology, a film talk show here on WFYI HD2 The Point at WFYI.org.
Any good?
I don't watch movies.
Well, have you heard anything about either one of them?
I find it's best to stay out of other people's affairs. You know who I can do without? I can do without the people in the video store.
Which ones?
All of them.
What would you get for a 6-year-old boy who chronically wets his bed?
So do you have any new movies in?
Do you have that one with that guy who was in that movie that was out last year?
They never rent quality flicks. They always pick the most intellectually devoid movie on the racks.
Ooh, Navy SEALs!
It's like in order to join, they have to have an IQ less than their shoe size.
Just go open the video store.
Yeah, open the video store!
Blockbuster Video! Wow, what a difference!
Well, in case you didn't see it, here it is again.
Speaking of somebody getting big paper, that's Tyler Hansborough.
That's right.
We're also your source for Tyler Hansborough information here at Film Sociology. Just the many myriad of gifts that this show provides besides
crack film
criticism.
Jarrett and I were looking at the playoffs.
Oh, by the way, this is the sports portion of Film Sociology, yes?
Yeah. Jarrett and I were looking at the playoff standings if the playoffs started
today. Yes.
And the Raptors are currently sitting in fourth. That would mean the Toronto Raptors would have home court advantage in the first round.
Wow. Would they? You think they got a chance of playing the Pacers?
Well, if they stayed in fourth, assuming the Pacers take first,
mm-hmm.
Raptors stay in fourth, if they beat the Brooklyn Nets in the first round, who would be fifth, then yes, the Raptors would play the Pacers.
See, I think Tyler got a raw deal. He should have received a Peyton-esque response from the community when he returned.
Billboards.
Yeah, I think so. Of our favorite look, the Tyler Hansborough look. Yeah. And he can read.
Distant stare in the eyes and mouth agape looking at who knows what.
We'll have to share this with our guests a little later on. Welcome back to Film Sociology, a film talk show here on WFYI HD2 The Point and WFYI.org. I'm Matthew Sosi, hanging out with Paige Scott and Brian G. Hartz. They are very patient, as usually most of our guests can be. Before we get to what's on Blu-ray, I got to mention, of course, tomorrow night at 7:00 at Garfield Park Arts Center.
Oh, yes.
They're showing Duck Soup.
Ah.
Fantastic Marx Brothers comedy, Hail Fredonia, Kobe, you still have my box set. Get going on that. Mm-hmm. You know, Bianca will love them as well. And we also have the Banff Film Festival, which is happening at the Buskirk Chumley Theater in Bloomington on the 29th and the 30th. So documentaries about mountain culture from action sports to landscape worship. So that is happening down in Bloomington. Now, because of Noah, there was – and, of course, there's lots of people whose knickers are already in a twist over Noah. Of course, a lot of them haven't seen it. Just like 1988.
But they're ruining
just
it.
Just like 1970. Yes, they're right. They're ruining it, but they don't know how, but they know he is. But just like with Last Temptation of Christ, just like with Life of Brian, lots of ruffled feathers without actually having seen the thing.
Or even Jesus Christ Superstar before the Christians was there decided a big, they liked rock.
I would say, was there a big hullabaloo? I guess there was a little bit of a hullabaloo yes. And a little bit of another musical
variety.
The
relationship between Mary Magdalene and Jesus is kind of, well, indicated that it was something more, but not really. Depends on interpretation.
Right.
Yeah,
you're talking about
a bit of a hot
Jesus Christ Superstar.
Yeah, Jesus
yes.
Christ Superstar.
I love Jesus
and
Christ
also,
Superstar.
Of course, in The Last Temptation of Christ. But
well, that's the well, yes, that, yeah. considerably yes. difference. So, hello, Barbara Hershey. But there was an article, and Richard Propes, one of our regulars, one of our regular IFJA guys, and guest and mm-hmm. host, substitute host, if you listen carefully, Sir Paul Hums. But he forwarded a column that was written. I can't remember who wrote it, so I apologize for not being able to give credit where credit is due. But it was an article called What's Wrong with Christian Filmmaking? And this is in lieu because of Noah, because of, there was a film that's out called God's Not Dead with Kevin Sorbo and Dean Cain, two actors you think of when you think of Christian
Wait,
cinema.
Which one plays God?
Don't know. Doesn't say. But there's that, and of course the Greg Kinnear film, which is going to be opening up, I think, in the next couple of weeks. So, anyway, a Christian wrote this, and it kind of sums up best. It's very quick and to the point. One, the first, as he writes, the first problem is that Christian filmmaking needs to be safe. When is the last time a big faith-based film had an R rating because of its true depiction of sin? It's a huge dilemma because we, as followers of Christ, don't want to sin ourselves in making a film. That's why Kirk Cameron got his wife to play a scene where he had to kiss another woman.
Wow.
Yeah. In Fireproof, Kirk Cameron would not kiss the actress playing his wife. He brought in his wife, his actual wife, to put on a wig for the shot. Yeah. So there's that. Second problem is listed. The filmmaking needs to be predictable. Good triumphs over evil. Got that. And then the third problem is preaching to the choir. So this could also be kind of said with Tyler Perry films.
Yes.
So the fact that Noah is
or Michael Moore documentaries
or Adam Sandler films.
Oh God.
So the fact that Noah is taking a chance and doing something not based on, well, it's not based on a book because it's credited that way. Darren Aronofsky co-wrote it. So anyway, we'll see how that is. Take more risk. Start challenging your audience. And this goes for everyone. It's basically the three things. So look up. It's a Tumblr. Oh, God, I have to spell this out. Sorry. Thimblr. IGSARK is that was where I found it from, the source. And it's called What's Wrong with Christian Filmmaking.
Perhaps you can post it on the blog.
Ooh, I have to work on that. Okay. All right. So, new on DVD and Blu-ray, there's a couple of titles. And Kobe, you and Fair Sweet Bianca can now watch The Wolf of Wall Street at home.
Yeah. Yeah.
Kobe liked it. Bianca, not so much.
Nope. It's obnoxious.
It's obnoxious.
Quote.
I shake my head in disapproval.
Over her declaration of.
I hated
of,
that movie.
Did you?
Yes.
Hated the content or hated the. And hated the film itself?
Like, I hated the content. I hated the thing itself. And I get that it was based on a true story. I don't know. I have so much feelings. Like,
wow. No, that's all right. Just, we don't have a 7-second delay, but, please.
Oh, no.
Okay.
No, it's fine. No.
Just didn't want to spend 3 hours with these folks?
When I saw it, I saw it on Christmas Day, and I saw...
Wow. That's great. Not since Django Unchained has there been a more proper film on Christmas Day.
I saw two. I saw American Hustle, and then I saw Wolf of Wall Street, which The themes of those two are the exact same.
Wow, that's a lot of time with some scheming white folks.
But, like, with American Hustle, they actually not quite changed for the better, but you saw redeeming qualities where at the end of Wolf of Wall Street, he just was a horrible person.
Yes, but he was stuck in his hell selling pens to people who have no idea how to sell things. Oh, I'm sorry. Spoiler alert for a three-month-old film.
Oh, no. People who read the book probably already know that.
Right, but I kind of like the way that turns out for him. But no, my wife, and there's a lot of other people like Fair Sweet Bianca that, yeah, you're not necessarily wanting the timeshare condo with these people, let alone spend 3 hours with it. So, now, however, you did say, we'll get to the videos in a little bit. You did see Grand Budapest Hotel.
Yes, I did.
Enjoy it?
I loved it. Cool. I want to live in that world always.
If you're old enough, Ralph Fiennes will come after you.
Oh, no.
Nah. And Kobe, you saw that with Fair Sweet.
Mm-hmm.
Is Ralph Fiennes in it?
Ralph Fiennes, not only is he in it, he gets to do comedy.
Yes.
The last time we got to hear Ralph Fiennes do anything humorous, if you think about
Bruges.
It. Oh, I didn't even say Curse of the Were-Rabbit. But yeah, he is funny in Bruges.
In
That's
Bruges,
true.
He's hilarious.
He is hilarious in Bruges. I take that back.
It? Yes.
But he gets to tear it up a little bit, and he gets the lead, and it's a lot of fun. Of course, you get a lot of the regular players from Wes Anderson's work.
I'm ordinarily reticent about Wes Anderson. I've never been on his bandwagon, but Ralph Fiennes might just get me.
And it's I will say it's Anderson's version of the 1930s screwball comedy.
Okay.
Now it's not at the same pace as something like His Girl Friday. There are moments of that.
Nothing is at the same pace.
That's actually true. But there is, as I was talking with Kobe, there are the perfectly centered shots. Mm-hmm. Everything is very picturesque.
That was very cool.
A lot of dry humor mixed in with some of the wacky Anderson type stuff Anderson stuff happens, basically. So.
Yeah. And it seemed to me that the majority of the people in the theater were more keen to, more hip to the Anderson things that were going on than I was.
This was your second Anderson
film.
This
was my first Anderson.
You didn't see Fantastic Mr. Fox?
Did not.
Wow. So this is your first.
Mm-hmm.
You liked it.
Yeah, I liked it. I have trouble getting attached to a particular director. It didn't seem to me that everybody else in the theater has that particular problem, but you know, there was a lot of hype. I feel like about it's Wes Anderson, it's a Wes Anderson movie. He could have shown paint drying for 2 hours and people would have still loved it because it's Wes Anderson. I don't necessarily get that.
That's kind of how I felt about the Royal Tenenbaums anyway, but you know, I think I'm in the minority here.
What are you saying? Yeah, no, you are. I still enjoy his work, and I especially liked Grand Budapest.
It's kind of like Steven Soderbergh. I like Steven Soderbergh. I love the Ocean's movies, all three of them.
But have you seen Bubble?
No, and you know I don't.
You don't want to. Schizopolis.
I don't look at the. You know, I don't look at his. You know, filmography, whatever. See something coming out. It's like, I got to see it. It's Steven Soderbergh.
Different director every time he directs a movie. So.
That's actually kind of true. So, okay,
did like it.
Okay, good.
Mm-hmm. The perfectly centered shots were cool.
Fair Sweet Bianca, enjoy it?
Mm-hmm.
Did you see the clip?
Very much so.
Did you see the clip I left for you in the studio?
Oh, no, I missed that.
That's fine. That's all right. Okay, so back to Wolf of Wall Street for just a little bit. So, yes, you can watch it, and of course, Paige, you can fast forward through it. But but as Richard Probst pointed out and as the gang of the Film Yap pointed out, don't buy it. Because the Blu-ray has one special feature that's about 15 minutes long, and the DVD has none. This is Scorsese. Scorsese not only does really good commentary and should do them for every single film he's made and other people's, but there should be...
He has, actually.
Yeah, there should be wall-to-wall special features on this. So I'm hoping that there will be a super... They'll come up with some clever thing for... The Dwarf Tossing Edition. I don't know. This is obnoxious edition of Wolf of Wall Street on DVD and Blu-ray. Also out on Blu-ray this week. Actually, kind of it had a quick turnaround, but it's not because it's a bad film. It's, of course, occasionally, speaking of Soderbergh, you can get a film that's out in theaters and then released on Blu-ray or on demand immediately. But the French-Iranian film The Past is now you can watch that at home from the filmmaker that gave us A Separation, the great Iranian drama. about a, and this is a very intense drama about finalizing a divorce and the onion on, you know, opening of the onion as far as relationships and the cobwebs and cobwebs? No, spider web. Never mind. It's a good drama. Go
World Wide Web.
Also out, something Kobe will not watch, Delivery Man. You get a kinder, gentler Vince Vaughn.
Where
he finds out he's donated.
Right. No, yeah, that's
he's the donor of so much precious fluid, I believe Jack the Ripper said.
It's dumb.
Yes. So
precious bodily fluid.
That's right. Yes. And yes, showing Dr. Strangelove this week.
Yes.
And then Walking with Dinosaurs for those who like talking dinosaurs. Now, old titles out on Blu-ray, a film that is still, I think, even more relevant today than it was when it first came out in 1983. The only other film I can think of, a couple films actually, that have that same category, Slapshot and Network. But Martin Scorsese's The King of Comedy is out on Blu-ray. Fine, fine, underappreciated film with De Niro and Jerry Lewis. Mm-hmm. So not being Johnny Carson or other talk show hosts. And the cinematic apex of Sandra Bernhard. That's not a very big compliment. So,
not to be confused with Sarah Bernhardt. But
that's a different filmography. Also out, the Burt Lancaster drama The Swimmer from 1968. Frank Price directed that, I believe. Criterion has put out the Harold Lloyd film The Freshman as on Blu-ray, as well as Ingmar Bergman's Persona. I would probably switch those in reversal. It's funny, you mentioned, Paige, you mentioned Wolf of Wall Street and American Hustle. The film critics had, we had back-to-back screenings, and it was those. Only it was Wolf and, yeah, Wolf then Hustle.
Oh, yeah.
Better that. Better in that order. I assure you. Also out, the Abel Ferrara revenge drama Ms. 45, so women can act like Charles Bronson, too, in an acerbic sort of way. The drama Boardwalk with Lee Strasberg and Ruth Gordon from 1979. And if you don't have it already, Warner Brothers, in their fine job of repackaging, the Best of Bogart collection. Four films. Anybody want to guess which four?
Oh, maybe Maltese Falcon, Casablanca,
one, two,
African Queen. Three. Big Sleep.
Nope.
No. No, give it to me.
Treasure of the Sierra Madre.
Okay, all right. So,
but good. That was, see? Let's see how fast that was.
That was
very impressed. Okay, so, Paige, Brian.
Yo.
How did Bomb on a Bus happen? And I mean this in a good way. So, because like I said, I a long time ago I wrote, because all you have to do is, as far as a punchline, is say a musical version of Fill in the Blank. Spinal Tap did a musical version of God's Somebody Up There Likes Me.
Uh-huh.
I once wrote in a script that a musician was creating a musical version of The Wild Bunch.
Nice.
You, folks, however, have actually done a musical parody of the 1994 action film Speed. How did it happen?
Well, it actually started, I was a senior in college, 2008. I was having a conversation with a friend of mine, and the modern musical theater thing now is to turn a movie into a musical.
Yes, of course.
Hairspray was huge, and the producers and all those lend themselves well to a musical theater context. And then, like, it got strange because then we were like, "What would not work?" And then I was like,
"Well,
Speed."
I think we just mentioned two of them, but yeah.
Yes, and Speed, and it was like an inside joke. And then I wrote a song called My Life's the Bomb. And I was doing a show called Butt with Q Artistry, and had a brief conversation with Ben Asakwe, their artistic director.
Hello, Ben.
Told him that was going on in my head, and he was like, okay. Commission it. Like, I'm game for it. So that's how it happened, and
Ben Asakwe is the kind of guy who, if you go to him and say, I'm thinking about a musical version of Speed, he will say, do it.
Cool.
Yeah. So challenge accepted.
So how many songs?
There are about, 13? 13 songs, 2 acts.
Yeah,
runs an hour 35 with an intermission.
Yeah,
so
it's brisk. Briskly paced.
Well,
you
have to.
Musical version of Speed. Because
if the musical gets under 50, that's bad. That's bad things happen. So how long did it take for you to write it?
It's been in the back of my head probably like 2 years since like I started like writing, really going at it. You
okay.
Know? So yeah.
So Brian, you're besides being a regular here on the show, and we thank the heavens for that. But you're also in this.
I am in this show. Yeah. My character is Ortiz, the angry Mexican construction worker.
Because that's who we think of. We think of you immediately when we think of the
think of Ortiz, the angry Mexican.
Yeah. He's the guy who Keanu refers to as Gigantor several times during the film.
Well, you are Gigantor. You're a tall dude.
But not, let's put it this way. I'm about as convincingly Mexican-looking as Charlton
Heston
in
Touch of Evil. Thank you.
But if he could pull it off... I think I'm doing slightly better.
So does this mean Monica's Janet Leigh waiting at home for you? She
be
is
bad.
Now.
You made it happen.
Yes, but we've got a fantastic cast.
Yes, who else is in it? I know some of the usual indie theater suspects.
Yes, a great guy, Logan Moore. One of those rare guys who has like leading man good looks, but also can sing the hell out of a song, mm-hmm. and is really, really funny playing the Keanu role.
Carrie Morgan, she does, I think she's Sandra Bullock's character.
Yeah.
Dave Ruark, who does stuff at Comedy Sports, he's the Dennis Hopper role.
So he's got a busy opposite hand.
Yes.
So, I guess, how do you stage this? Because I know a few years back, I think it was off-Broadway, there was a play called Action Movie The Play.
Really?
Yes, you'll have to actually look it up. But it was, and there were things like, theirs was like, you know, having two guys on top of buses shooting at each other.
Yes.
And they were, if I remember right, they were kind of using the warhorse-esque marionettes,
really?
You know, for the two guys up there, or risers or something like that. So how does one stage an action scene on a stage? They both looked at each other before answering.
Bravery,
that's,
I don't know. Well, we've had this show particularly staged. We have like it's a three-quarter thrust, mm-hmm. where the bus is kind of in the audience, and the audience surrounds it. And then we got a platform, mm-hmm. above where the command stations for the other characters that aren't on the bus. Where
whenever you see the Dennis Hopper character that played by Dave, he's always above the stage, and the bus is exploding into the audience. But the good thing about having a bus for a stage and having all the action confined to a bus by plot necessity is that your staging options are kind of by definition limited, but it makes it that much more fun. When you're trying to do choreography to a musical number, when you're in a long, narrow space,
we've mastered that.
and probably wrecked a few people for future musicals.
The only thing wrecked so far has been a bit of the set when one of our actors fell off the stage during rehearsal. I'm not naming any names, Tiffany.
Is she okay?
She's fine. Okay. She's fine.
She laughed.
But, it's been a lot of fun. I'm glad that Paige and Ben decided to trust me with this.
Yeah, we're glad to have you.
So where is it, and how long is it? How much more does it run?
We run for the next 2 weekends. It is at the Irvington Lodge. Mm-hmm.
8 p.m. And you can get tickets at qartistry.org. That's the letter Q, as in the dude from James Bond, Artistry.
Or Avenue.
Or Avenue, or, you know, the dude from Star Trek. Whatever.
Whatever. And, of course, nobody will be admitted during the big jump scene.
Yeah, it's a little dangerous. Oh, yeah. Well, actually, you've got to see what happens during the jump scene. It's, even
magic.
If you've seen the movie, we've got that this page has built in a wonderful little twist. You might say it's magical.
Okay, so this should hopefully lead to more musicals based on the films of Jan DeBont. So I think Twister's next. Then
Done.
The Haunting.
All right.
Nice. Hey, Kobe, you all right over there?
Yeah, we're good.
Okay, just checking in. So we're going to go into the archives for a little bit, because this is a portion of the show. These are movies that you can buy online. You can't buy them in stores. You know, Warner Brothers does these, MGM, Paramount, or as Kobe likes to put it.
Yeah, I'll burn it for like $5.
Or in this case, probably more like 19. But I had been on, and this doesn't happen very often, but it might not happen to the host of Film Sociology, but I'd been on a bit of a Richard Widmark kick lately, which is not a bad place to be. There was, because a couple weeks ago I talked about I saw not one, but two films with Richard Widmark and Henry Fonda. Of course, the Don Siegel cop film Madigan from 1968 and the Edward Dmytryk Western from 1959 called Warlock. And then I can't remember how it happened, but I mentioned, I was doing the laugh, the Richard Widmark laugh, which I will not do on the radio. It's only for the family, from Kiss of Death, because Emma thought it sounded like Renfield. And I said, yeah, there's a little bit of that.
Which Renfield?
I'm sorry, the original Renfield.
Whitefry?
Not Tom Waits, sorry. That's a whole...
Speaking of Keanu Reeves movies.
That's true. Don't lick the razor. But I was explaining... I was explaining to Emma the film Kiss of Death and showed her the scene, the big scene that got Richard Widmark on the map, pushing an old woman in a wheelchair down a flight of stairs. So there's that. So because of that, I found, and it was, of course, it's funny, Kobe mentions that there are filmmakers, he doesn't follow filmmakers, like I must, you must engulf the Steven Soderbergh discography, which would not be a bad thing to do, I might add.
It would take a long time.
It would take a long time, but I found a film I had not seen, directed by everyone's favorite Mr. Freeze, Otto Preminger. Not Arnold.
I was going to say.
Not Eli Wallach.
Arnold directs?
No. Ooh, there's a count. No, those are his commentaries. Speaking of somebody who does not do, well, he does do amusing commentaries. Oh. They're just unintentionally hilarious.
Oh, my God.
So if you must, listen to the commentary for Conan the Barbarian.
It's astonishing.
It is. But anyway, Otto Preminger in 1959 directed a film version of the play Saint Joan.
Yes.
By George Bernard Shaw, and it was adapted for the stage by Graham Greene. And this starred Gene Seberg as Joan. Gene didn't have the best time in Hollywood. Had more luck overseas, I would say. But you also had, as young as he could be, John Gielgud was in this, as well as Harry Andrews. And playing against type was Richard Widmark as the king. He was very... The king in this was juvenile, and it almost reminded me of John in Lion in Winter, only it was played by a guy considerably older, I think, in Widmark. Yeah. Do you remember seeing this?
I've seen a little bit of it. I haven't seen the whole thing.
It's not bad. It's amusing to watch Widmark act like a little kid.
Yeah.
Jumping around.
He's usually the heavy. You know?
He is usually the heavy. So I think part of it was, I think, obviously he wanted to play against type. Wanted to work with Otto Preminger, probably wanted to work with Gene Seberg, because in the late 50s, who didn't? And then check out Paint Your Wagon. But it's not a bad play. I would like to see the play done sometime. And it's in the pantheon of Joan of Arc films, is of course better than Luc Besson's The Messenger.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. Mila Jovovich is as Joan of Arc, not...
No,
not even was there,
but,
so...
Oh, what's the one I'm thinking of? Never mind.
I don't know. I can't
remember. The 20s. Who's the director? Never mind.
Welcome
totally
to spitballing on Film Sociology. Kobe, I think it's that we should probably have one of our production meetings during the show. Do we have Chris Lloyd's?
Absolutely.
So
doing our the annual show of Dead People We Like.
There's a pretty big one this week.
We don't have time for dead people we don't like.
Yes.
No, we don't. And we actually do have a pretty big one, as Joe Shearer said. We don't have time for dead people we don't like. But character actor James Rebhorn passed. And there was, I guess I want to start with, Brian, if you put your technology down for a little bit. This was a 1-2 punch, because James Rebhorn was one of those classic that guys. And it was a great moment where in studio you held up his picture to Paige and the light bulb went off. Mm-hmm. And you immediately started thinking of the stuff that you knew him from. And so going back, this was a great character actor moment, because I think the first thing that really registered with me was Scent of a Woman. He was going toe-to-toe and losing to Al Pacino at the end of Scent of a Woman. He, of course, was also if you needed a white-haired, conservative, uptight doctor or lawyer or authority figure, and then but anyway, so see him in something like that, and of course Independence Day, which got him a lot of notice. But I finally got his name down to memory because of Meet the Parents, because he had a fun bit being married to Phyllis George and being in that comedy. But going through his filmography, I was like, what else has he done before I got to realize, hey, it's that guy.
Yep.
So going through, yes, we have paperwork here. As far back as 1976, the Yum Yum Girls, which I really can't recommend for anybody to watch. But the 1980 horror film He Knows You're Alone, Soup for One, hello, Saul Rubinek. He was a doctor in Silkwood. Also did The House on Carroll Street. That was with Jeff Daniels. Lots of TV. Mm-hmm. And a lot. He was in the Mickey Rourke, Anthony Hopkins version of Desperate Hours, directed by Michael Cimino. Regarding Henry, Shadows and Fog, My Cousin Vinny, White Sands, Basic Instinct. We already mentioned Son of a Woman.
Sorry, go on.
No, he played George Wilbur in My Cousin Vinny.
George Wilbur.
You have to look it up. Carlito's Way, I do remember. Guarding Tess, 8 Seconds, White Squall, Up Close and Personal, The Game, he was really good in that, in the David Fincher film. Snow Falling on Cedars, Talented Mr. Ripley, of course he was quite good in that. The Adventures of Rocky and Bullwinkle, nobody should really see. Because of the Richmond Shakespeare Festival, I think I'm going to be watching this again because we own it, but he was Norm Duncan, the owner of Duncan's Cafe in Scotland,
yes,
PA.
Yes, he was. Oh, that's a great movie.
And because we're trying to do it, it's Macbeth, but it's set in the 1970s fast food world. Believe it or not, best thing Maura Tierney's ever done.
Yeah, Maura Tierney and
James LaGrosse. Christopher Walken is in it. Andy Dick is actually amusing in it.
I'm sold.
Hysterical.
Yeah, it's go look for it. Cold Mountain, Head of State, Far From Heaven, and last couple things, The Box, it was in Real Steel. And, of course, he did a few TV series of note, Enlightened, White Collar, and I know he was Frank Matheson on Homeland.
Yep.
Most recently. It's enough to raise a glass and say, you know, thank you, Mr. Revhorn, for all your work. But then another news item came up. He wrote his own obituary. And Brian, if you mind lending your vocal talents to this.
Sure.
Just if you haven't read it yet, here it is.
His life, according to Jim. James Robert Revhorn was born on September 1st, 1948 in Philadelphia, Pennsylvania. His mother, Ardell Frances Revhorn, née Hawk, loved him very much and supported all his dreams. She taught him the value of good manners and courtesy, and that hospitality is no small thing. His father, James Harry Revhorn, was no less devoted to him. From him, Jim learned that there is no excuse for poor craftsmanship. A job well done rarely takes more or less time than a job poorly done. They gave him his faith and wisely encouraged him to stay in touch with God. He is survived by his sister, Janice Barbara Galbraith, of Myrtle Beach, South Carolina. She was his friend, his confidant, and more often than either of them would like to admit, his bridge over troubled waters. He is also survived by his wife, Rebecca Fulton Lynn, and his two daughters, Emma Rebecca Rebhorn and Hannah Lynn Rebhorn. They anchored his life and gave him the freedom to live it. Without them, always at the center of his being, his life would have been little more than a vapor. Rebecca loved him with all his flaws, and in her the concept of ceaseless love could find no better example. His children made him immensely proud. Their dedication to improving our species and making our world a better place gave him hope for the future. They deal with grief differently, and they should each manage it as they see fit. He hopes, however, that they will grieve his passing only as long as necessary. They have much good work to do, and they should get busy doing it. Time is flying by. His son-in-law, Ben, also survives him. Jim loved Ben, who was a son to Jim, especially through these last months. His aunts, Jean, Dorothy, and Florence, numerous cousins and their families, and many devoted friends also survived Jim. He loved them all, and he knows that they loved him. Jim received his B.A. at Wittenberg University and his M.F.A. at Columbia. He was a member of Lambda Chi Alpha Nu Zeta. That's a long title. A lifelong Lutheran and a longtime member of both the AMC and ACLU. Jim was fortunate enough to earn his living doing what he loved. He was a professional actor. His unions were always there for him, and he will remain forever grateful for the benefits he gained as a result of the union struggle. Without his exceptional teachers and the representation of the best agents in the business, he wouldn't have had much of a career. He was a lucky man in every way. Jim Revhorn, March 2014. Class act.
Thanks, Jim. And thank you, Brian. And thank you, Paige.
Thank you.
Ladies and gentlemen, some words to live by.
Oh, man.
You didn't!
Free these people! Zardoz has spoken.
Where can people go for tickets once more?
QArtistry.org. Bomb on a bus tonight, 8 o'clock, Irvington Lodge.
This weekend and next weekend, right?
You got it.
Go see a good movie. You deserve it. You're listening to Film Sociology, a film talk show here on WFYI HD2 The Point and WFYI.org.
We gone. Good night, Fort Myers. Good night, California.